Joseph was a second person under Pharaoh, a very powerful position. And as a result, the Pharaoh allowed the Israelites to settle in the Nile Delta, called Goshen. In Exodus 1, we find that the Israelites have become prosperous and increased in numbers over the time. The couple of hundred years took past. But they were multiplying faster than the Egyptians. And after the death of Pharaoh and Joseph, eventually in verse 8 of Exodus 1, it says, "Now there arose a new king over Egypt who did not know Joseph." He did not realize what Joseph had done to save Egypt from a disaster. And in verses 8 to 14, you will find that the Egyptians became fearful of the Israelites, and they were worried that lest they join with their enemies and become too powerful, so they gradually put them into slavery and got them building their cities. With this work, though, the Israelites only became fitter and stronger despite the oppression. And finally, in verse 16, the king of Egypt instructed the Hebrew midwives to kill the boy child as they were born. But the Israelites feared God, the midwives feared God, so they didn't do so. So the key thing is in verse 22. "So Pharaoh commanded all his people, saying, 'Every son who is born you shall cast into the river, and every daughter you shall save alive.'" So the whole nation was involved in killing Israelite baby boys. Now this brings us to Moses. And you remember from your school days or your childhood where they talked about Moses being put in a little basket and floated on the river with his sister keeping watch on him. And he was found by a princess of Egypt, chapter 2, verse 5 to 6. "Then the daughter of Pharaoh came down to bathe at the river, and her maidens walked along the riverside. And when she saw the ark among the reed, she sent her maid to get it. When they opened it, she saw the child, and behold, the baby wept. So she had compassion on him and said, 'This is one of the Hebrews' children.'" And ironically, this child who grew up to be Moses ended up destroying her people, although God waited a long time before he actioned. When Moses was grown, he was involved in a confrontation between an Egyptian and an Israelite, and he killed the Egyptian, and he had to flee into Midian till the Pharaoh died, which you'll read in verse 23 of chapter 2. "Now it happened in the process of time that the king of Egypt died. Then the children of Israel groaned because of their bondage and cried out." Their cry came up to God because of the bondage. This was when Moses was about 80 years old. So God had waited patiently for a long time before he took action. You turn over to chapter 5, verse 1 to 3. God sends Moses and Aaron to Pharaoh. "Afterward, Moses and Aaron went in and told Pharaoh, 'Thus said the Lord God of Israel, let my people go, that they may hold a feast to me in the wilderness.' And Pharaoh said, 'Who is the Lord that I should obey his voice and let Israel go? I do not know the Lord, nor will I let Israel go.' So they said, "The God of the Hebrews has met with us. Please let us go 3 days' journey into the desert and sacrifice to the Lord our God, lest he fall upon us with pestilence or with sword." So Pharaoh refused, and God knew that Pharaoh refused, because he says in Exodus 7 verse 1, "So the Lord said to Moses, see, I have made you as God to Pharaoh, and Aaron your brother shall be your prophet." You remember that Moses was very afraid to appear before Pharaoh, and he was very afraid to speak, so God had to make Aaron his spokesman. "You shall speak all that I command you, and Aaron your brother shall tell Pharaoh to send the children of Israel out of his land, and I will harden Pharaoh's heart and multiply my signs, my wonders in the land of Egypt, but Pharaoh will not heed you, so that I may lay my hand on Egypt and bring my armies and my people, the children of Israel, out of Egypt by great judgments, and the Egyptians shall know that I am the Lord when I stretch out my hand on Egypt and bring out the children of Israel from among them." So there are two things: that God is judging Israel, not just for the slavery, but for the murder of all those boys. And he was also showing that he is God and not the gods of Egypt. This is what the plagues are about. They're an attack on the gods of Egypt, as well as a punishment on the people. Obviously, I can't comment in detail on all plagues, which is why I've handed out, which I gave you a handout that covers all the plagues, and you can look at them in more detail. But I'm only going to focus on three plagues today. The first plague was the water of Egypt, including the Nile River, turning to blood. Now, if you know anything about Egypt, you know it depends on the Nile River for survival. Even today, cultivation only extends about 5 miles either side of the Nile River, and then you come to desert. Before the Aswan Dam was built in 1970, that stops a lot of this happening, the Nile River would flood annually in the summer, and the deposit of rich silt would come down from the Central African Highlands and act as a fertilizer on the lands of Egypt. The Egyptians worshipped the Nile River under the name Hapi, H-A-P-I, or Apis, also Apis the bull, the sacred bull representing Osiris. Hapi was the god of the annual flooding. It was another name for Nimrod, the founder of Egypt. In point of fact, when Alexander the Great came to Egypt, he was initiated into all the rites and secrets of the Egyptian religion, and the most secret thing of the Egyptian religion, we know this because Alexander came out and blabbed about it, was that the original gods were people, were based on ancient people. So that's why we know Nimrod was one of their gods. If you turn to Exodus 7 verse 15, "Go to Pharaoh in the morning when he goes to the water, and you shall stand by the river's bank to meet him, and the rod which was turned into a serpent you shall take in your hand." Pharaoh was at the river at the time of the rising of the river. It was a ceremony. It was a place of the time when they went to worship. They reckon it was about June the 12th, roughly. "As the river rose, it changed colour from clear to yellow and then to red." Actually, it's not blood, it's due to presence of microscopic organisms. But what God was about to do was quite different, starting in verse 17. Thus saith the Lord, by this you shall know that I am the Lord. Behold, I will strike the waters which are in the river with the rod that is in my hand, and they shall turn to blood. The fish that are in the river shall die. Because, of course, the Egyptians were pretty dependent on the fishing in the river. The river shall stink, and the Egyptians shall loathe to drink the water of the river. And it was not just the river, it says in verse 19, then the Lord spoke to Moses, say to Aaron, take your rods and stretch out your hand over the waters of Egypt, over their streams, over their rivers, over their ponds, and over their pools of water, that they may become blood. And there shall be blood throughout all the land of Egypt, both in buckets of wood and pitchers of stone. That's where they stored the water from the river, so there was no water to drink. As God turning to blood reminded the people of the blood of the innocent children that had been shed. And this plague lasted 7 days. They were without water for 7 days. In Exodus 8, 1-15 was a second plague, the plague of frogs. This was an attack on the frog god called HEQT, which represented good fortune and resurrection. They were up to their neck in good fortune, and the magicians who reproduced this only made the plague worse by producing more frogs. The third plague in Exodus 8 16-19 was lice, which appeared to come out of the earth. This was an attack on the god Seb, who was the protector of the earth. This probably took place in late September or early October. The fourth plague was either of flies or beetles, we're not quite sure, but the fly was worshipped as Beelzebub, and the beetle was represented on images of Chepura, the sun god, is shown with the head of the beetle. It's important to note at the point of the fourth plague that the verse 22 of chapter 8, and in that day I shall set apart the land of Goshen in which my people dwell, that no swarms of flies shall be there, in order that you may know that I am the Lord in the midst of the land. From then on, Goshen was protected from the plagues. That took place at the fourth plague. The fifth plague was the death of beasts. The Egyptian worshipped the bull Apis. The Egyptians have an image of a bull with a sun between its horns. This was in fact what they were worshipping when they got to Sinai, remember, when Moses was receiving God's law. The sixth plague was a plague of boils. At this point in this chapter 9 verse 11, the magicians could not stand before Moses because of the boils, for the boils were on the magicians. At this point the magicians dropped out. That was the sixth plague. The sixth plague was an attack on Imhotep, the god of medicine. The seventh plague was hail. Here it's rather interesting, reading Exodus 9, verse 20. He that feared the word of the Lord among the servants of Pharaoh made his servants and his livestock flee to the houses. This is where some of the Egyptians were beginning to fear God. And this was the origin of the mixed multitude who left Egypt with Israel. They got the message. This was in February, because that's, if you see in verse 31, the barley was in the head and the flax was in bud, because that took place in February. And this was an attack on Reshpu, the god of storms. In Exodus 10 we have the eighth plague of locusts, which was destroyed what was left of the plants and trees, including the wheat and spelt. These were the main crops in Egypt. In the time of the Roman Empire, Rome depended on Egypt for its wheat. This is where the wheat came from. At this point, Pharaoh was starting to negotiate, trying to weedle his way around. He said, oh, the men could go and worship, but not the women or the animals. And this was rejected, of course. Now we come to the ninth plague in Exodus 10, verse 21 and 20 to 28. The ninth plague attacked the chief god Ra, the sun god, the creator god. This plague was darkness. Darkness was equivalent to a severe sandstorm, which obscures everything. If you get caught in a sandstorm in the Middle East, everything blocks out. You can hardly see anyone in front of you. It's that bad. This really caused the Pharaoh to panic, but he was still negotiating. He would let the people go, but he wouldn't let the animals go. In point of fact, sacrificing the animals was an abomination to the Egyptians. We come back to that. Notice the various gods attacked here. Ra, the creator god of the sun. Horus, the second god of the noonday sun. That's Semiramis' son. Thoth placed the stars, moon and sun, and gave light to the earth. Sedmet was a goddess of fire and artificial light. In fact, there are over 2,000 gods that the Egyptians worshipped. They worshipped animals, they worshipped the dung beetle, they worshipped the creation, they worshipped everything. The plague of darkness would have taken about March, April. Now the plagues are coming fairly quickly, one after another. The Egyptian economy is being decimated. And finally we get to the tenth and final plague. The firstborn was sacred to Ra. He was supposed to come to the earth in the form of the firstborn of a cow. The ram was sacred to Ra. So putting the blood of kids and lambs on the doorpost for protection was blasphemy to Ra and merited the death penalty. But it proved that the people of Israel trusted God and submitted to God for his protection. Other gods who were attacked now were Meshmet, the goddess of birth, Hathor, the protector of the firstborn, Min, the god of virility and generation, and Amon-Ra, who gave Ra's power to those who worshipped him. This tenth plague showed that the true God had power over the universe. The credibility of the gods was destroyed. Not only was the tenth plague an attack on the gods of Egypt, but also an attack on the society. Because the firstborn were the ones who inherited property and the possessions of their family when people died. This was God's final punishment for the murder of those innocent children. So what do we learn from the ten plagues from the book of Exodus? Finally, God was executing judgment on Egypt for the slavery and murders committed. Secondly, God was going to persuade the Egyptians to let go. You'll see in chapter 12 that they were desperate to get rid of them. Thirdly, God was showing that he was God and not the gods of Egypt. He destroyed all their credibility. This was the message to Israel. This is shown by the 10th plague, where the Israelites had to show their faith and belief by performing certain actions. This was the only plague where Israel had to take action. And like the Israelites, we all have a choice. Romans 6:16. Do you know that to whom you present yourselves slaves to obey, you are that one's slaves whom you obey, whether of sin leading to death or of obedience leading to righteousness? So we have to choose whether we're going to follow the world or follow God, follow the true God. You will see from Exodus 13 that the firstborn of Israel, both man and beast, belonged to God. They didn't belong to the gods of Egypt, they belonged to God. And this was a start of the process of Israel becoming the nation, his people, God's people. In Exodus 13, verse 13, you read, "But every firstborn of a donkey you shall redeem with a lamb, and if you will not redeem it, then you shall break its neck. And all the firstborn of man among your sons you shall redeem." The firstborn of the clean animals was to be dedicated to God for his sacrifices. The firstborn of people were to be redeemed by money, by payment. We are part of the firstborn of God, and we have been redeemed by Jesus Christ. That is the most important point. The first Passover in the Old Testament was the beginning of God's covenant with Israel as a nation. For us, the New Testament Passover is our renewal of our covenant with God.